All right, and welcome into another episode of Debate Night. We've got some exciting topics today. We're going to talk a little bit about Waco, get into maybe the Dynamic Disc acquisition that just went down. We got some interesting things to talk about. Today's cast, we've got, as always, Brody Smith.
Play conservative, play aggressive, Hunter. We're back, baby.
Yeah, we're joined by Hunter as well today.
I'm just thrilled to be here, Trevor. You're looking fantastic as always.
Thank you.
Glad you have me back.
Thank you. We got a new cast member today, Tyler Tulowitzki, rumored to be the brother of Troy Tulowitzki.
That's right. Happy Pi Day.
Oh, that's, man, good point. Maybe a bonus point
Head
there.
Head over to Blaze.
And then we've also got Taylor joining us again, a formidable foe on this show as well.
Yeah, but forgot the hat today. I missed the memo, but
that is true. That is true. Could be a factor. Big if true. All right, we're gonna hop right into it. So Waco went down. We're just gonna go right for the buzz topic here. This is gonna get feisty. I already know. But a lot of people after Ella Hansen had, we'll call it a meltdown. It was a meltdown. And there were a lot of people drawing comparisons to the Ella Hansen and the Kevin Jones situation and some of the things that Hunter and I had said and this and that. But my question is simply, did Ella Hansen prove that Kevin Jones playing conservative was the right move with her aggressive mistake on 18? Brody, what do you think?
All right. So for all those people that got mad at me for talking about something that I haven't watched yet, I am playing also in the tournament, so I cannot watch it live like you guys can. I also like to live react to these things on stream now. So I'm going to be doing that. So you can't get mad at me for not watching the footage, but I have an idea of what went down. I want to go two holes back though, Trevor.
Okay.
I think the big mistake was 16.
Yes.
She threw OB on 16. I have yet to see the coverage, so I'm looking forward to seeing that, but I think that was the biggest mistake. I think in practice and I don't think she practiced really the layup on 18 would be my guess. I think she was just thinking I can boost this over the water, no problem. And if I'm OB over there, then I can get up and down and save my par. That is where I think her head was at. And I just don't think she ended up practicing.
What just happened?
Talking because he timed himself.
Oh, you have a timer that just went off? I'm so confused. I'll give you a bonus point for being timely, but I was like, I mean, that was the most confused I've ever been. I was like, I thought he just exited out of the call, and then I thought your phone rang or something. Okay.
I thought my Wi-Fi froze. I was so confused.
I mean, on to Hunter. Brody's sticking to his point, I guess. On to Hunter.
All right. There you have it. Absolutely not. Ella Hansen did not prove this. So Kevin Jones was in a position that he needed to be aggressive, which is why it was a bad move for him to lay up. Had Kristen went for the green and stuck it, then Ella was in a position where she needed to be aggressive. That would have put Ella in Kevin Jones' shoes. But here, even her being aggressive isn't what cost her the tournament. Brody brought up hole 16 and hole 17. Those two OB strokes were somewhat uncalled for. But let's just look specifically at hole 18. Even when she throws it long, throws it OB going for the green, which in my opinion was the wrong decision. Even when she did that, she still had a chance to get up and down and force a playoff. Not getting up and down is what ended up losing her if you want to look at one specific shot and not taking into factor the whole thing. So even if you want to go that route of playing aggressive calls for the tournament, still really didn't, because she was still across the water with like 200-ish feet that she's had to get up and down to force a playoff, and she didn't execute that shot. So no, it did not prove my Kevin Jones point wrong.
Okay. Tyler, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I actually am totally okay with the move. She's got the power to get over it. Either you got to clear the water. You either got to do it on the first shot or the second shot. Why not? If she has the power, go ahead and do it. But use a different disc. Like, have a different line of point. Use a C-line plastic or use a PD2. Use something that's going to make sure that it doesn't turn over to where it catches that crosswind. It's going to pull it straight into the woods, which is exactly what she did. The most confusing thing is that she laid up on Saturday and took a par. Why didn't she do it on Sunday? But again, I'm totally okay with the play, because if you think about it, you go straight, you got an upshot, you tap in, par, worse. And like, she can match Kristen, but I'm totally okay with aggressive play because to her advantage with that power, she can clearly get over the water. But yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Bringing up that she had laid up previously. I didn't even know that. Yeah. Taylor, what do you think about the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say that one proved the other right or wrong just because it was both losses for both of them. I think optically, Kevin's loss doesn't look as bad because it really feels like Calvin beat him coming down the stretch when, like we've talked about, Ella was just giving away strokes on the last few holes. She really just made mistakes that you can't make. OB left on 16, early right on the upshot on 17, not even getting over close to the water. So I think that's where she really lost her composure and got rattled. I still don't understand the decision on 18. As we mentioned, she played it for par the day before and took that easy par that would have pushed the playoff. But I think what it really comes down to and what we learned is they both kind of failed on this 250-foot, 300-foot hyzer approach shot. Kevin's went out of bounds on 18. Ella just didn't have the confidence to go for it. And I think what we learned is if you don't have that shot, you're not going to win on the Elite Series. That's just a shot you have to win.
Are you referring to Kevin's drive on 18?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the layup.
Just for clarification, yes. Yeah, good points from everybody there. I mean, you're right. I think, Brody, you hit it the best. 16... You cannot go OB on
fairway.
16.
That fairway is 300 feet wide.
Because that was, I don't know if I've ever heard the commentary team as shocked as when they saw that thing skip and roll out of the bounds into the road. Like they could not believe it. Like that, they were, I mean, Ian Anderson, how early would Ian Anderson have called that tournament over? That's the real question.
My guess, and maybe you guys can answer this. My guess is it was a pretty heavy headwind. So my guess is she went super overstable and the nerves of just like the position she was in, she just early released it, would be my guess. And it just came out too much on hyzer and even into a headwind, too much hyzer, overstable, that thing's just going to sail left.
Yeah.
The day before she took her DD3, aimed left and turned it over. It seemed
It was a completely different tailwind. Right. Yeah. She was trying to do that shot.
Yeah.
She chose a different disc, tried to do the same shot as what it looks like, and it just hyzered out. She can't do that.
Yeah,
I thought she was just playing like a power hyzer with an overstable disc way out to the right and just be safe.
The line was aggressive.
Turn that thing over. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
All right. So we're gonna jump away from Waco for just a moment. We'll come back. Quick points update: Brody at 4, Hunter at 3, Tyler at 4, and Taylor at 4. Good first round for everybody there. We're gonna move on to something that kind of broke. A little under the radar. I haven't seen a ton of chatter about it. I think some people kind of saw this coming. Some might not be super familiar with it. But Dynamic Discs was recently acquired by venture capitalist company House of Discs, along with Westside Discs, completing the consolidation of the Trilogy brands. Would Disc Golf benefit from more consolidation amongst the larger business entities, or are there some dangerous side effects? Hunter.
Well, I think most of the consolidation, what you just brought up, makes sense. The only one, the company that's kind of thrown into this whole equation that wasn't mentioned here, which is Castoplast. But farther consolidation, in my opinion, doesn't make sense. I think the main problem isn't necessarily like dangerous side effects, but the main problem would arise from like a lack of diversity within the main companies in the sport, both in plastics, marketing strategies, and how they attack growing the sport. Because like right now, you have different manufacturers, they all have different focuses, and they're all going to be pushing for a similar common goal of growing the sport in different ways. You have a lot of different minds attacking the same problem. If you were to consolidate all of that and even start bringing media entities and stuff under one umbrella, then that could cause some problems. But I don't see that being an issue because I don't see Discraft, Innova, those type companies coming through and consolidating by any means. I would be shocked if that were to happen. But the consolidation of Trilogy makes a lot of sense because, to be honest with you, them is operating in three separate brands, all made by Latitude, was always confusing anyways. So bringing them all under one roof, that makes sense. Castoplast is the only real question mark there, but I don't think that it's something we need to worry about right now.
Man, it would sure be great if they would switch to all using the same plastic type so I didn't have to memorize three different kinds for the same plastic. Tyler, what do you think about all of it?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, we're talking about capitalism here, but I think at the end of the day, it's totally fine. I mean, it's not like Innova is acquiring another large top five company or anything like that to create more of a monopoly or anything like that. So I think the positives here is we're going to hopefully look at better plastic, more consolidation of business models. I think that we're also going to have a little bit more collaborative works to where they can create more quality for their customers. I think they're going to still operate as their own companies. They're just going to make sure they do it in a better business model. I mean, we all knew these guys were all working together. It's just now making it official. So, I mean, we haven't seen any changes in the last couple of years. I think it's just going to stay the same.
Yeah, I'd agree. Nothing jumps out at me. Taylor, what are you seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, I think off the top, the interest of venture capitalists in the sport offers some legitimacy. I think we've all been kind of wanting outside money in the sport to help us grow, especially on the professional side. But I agree that I don't think more consolidation at the top for those larger business entities, especially the manufacturers, really makes sense. I think what we'll see more than anything is some of the smaller companies, the offshoots that still have their dismolded by these companies, start to consolidate. I think the main pain point that brought this all together was kind of the supply issues we saw in COVID. And when times get tough, if you're the one manufacturing the disc, you're going to push your own brand before anybody else. So I think it'll be those smaller companies that are still being molded by those other companies start to come together first, except for there is one bigger one that has all their molds made by Latitude and made some big moves when the COVID hit with some supply chain issues, maybe had some issues with their CEO. I don't know. It could be a target.
Very good point. If it hasn't already been targeted, I'm sure that would make sense. Brody, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I'm glad I went last because this is a topic I really don't really have that much of an opinion on.
Oh, sick.
I don't know. It's a weird one for me to, I guess, because when we were talking about this a little bit last week, and I was trying to like understand, because if you switch to like the car companies, right? Toyota and Lexus are both owned under the umbrella. That makes sense to me because Toyota is like the cheaper kind of affordable cars. Lexus is like their luxury cars. Mm-hmm. With this, I guess when it comes to like separating out, you know, I don't know. Are we going to see like affordable, super cheap, affordable this? And then are we going to see one brand like Castoplast is all of a sudden going to be $30, $40? That kind of makes sense. But if everyone's just making the same disc, that's where it's like, I don't see this happening like across the board. It would only make sense for like the smaller ones getting bought out by a bigger one.
Yeah, I think for Dynamic, at least Latitude, it was a market play because Latitude was a European company. So mm-hmm. Dynamic was kind of their US play. So I think you see some of that, but you're right, Brody. I mean, to some extent, because it's like you have Westside in there and now Castoplast too. And it's like, yeah, there's some similar regions being overlapped seemingly. So it's like, when does a company decide to, you know, your analogy was actually good there. I'll give you another point for that. With like the, you know, are they going to start working in a direction where we're offering a company that specializes in lower end entry level versus luxury? That'll be interesting to see because they certainly now have the infrastructure to be able to do things like that. Mm-hmm. All right, we're gonna hop back into Waco. First, we got a points update. Brody and Tyler at 6, Hunter and Taylor at 7. Very competitive right now. We're gonna go back into Waco. Kyle Klein pulled off an impressive come from behind win at Waco, shooting 13 under in the final round. Really just went out and took it. This is his second Pro Tour victory. His first came in 2021. This is now his second. Has he been overrated or underrated up until this point in his career? And where does this win put him among the top players in the game? Also, what does his ceiling look like? Tyler, lead us off.
Absolutely the most underrated person on the face of the earth. Because when you look at Gannon and you look at Kyle, when they played against each other in events, they're 16-16-1. They're literally match for match. The only difference between Kyle and Gannon is that Kyle wasn't able to beat the McBeast in USDGC in 21 to get his major title. And also, Gannon's got a lawsuit, and Gannon's also 2 years younger than Kyle. When Kyle came onto the scene really strong in 21, he was the guy, the next guy coming up. All of a sudden, last year, Gannon almost wins the very first event, and we all forget about Kyle Klein. Absolutely most underrated, and this is another crazy stat. Out of those 33 matchups against the two, there's 32 strokes separating them between the two. So we all talk about Gannon. Kyle needs to be able to get his flowers right now. I think he's got to be the guy to be watching out for the rest of the year.
Love it. Love it. Taylor, what do you think?
Yeah, Kyle Klein definitely does feel underrated to me. He's got two Pro Tour wins, but they're at stops that always kind of produce some surprising winners at Waco and Idlewild. But I'm going to go to the same comparison. If the USDGC playoff goes his way, I think we're talking about him the same way we talk about Gannon right now. I mean, this is a kid that won the AmTour title and Worlds just a few years ago. He has every shot in his bag. I think the overall visuals just take a small hit due to where he's won on tour, but he should definitely be in that conversation of elite players that don't quite have that major win yet. I think with a few more years of learning how to win those big ones, he just needs some experience in contention for the big tournaments for the majors, but I definitely think multiple major wins are well within his ceiling in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that. I mean, he is a lot younger than we give him credit for. I think Gannon Burr, we fall into that like Jason Tatum thing where everybody would be like, he's only 19 years old. Like everybody used to do that a few years back. That's kind of how we treat Gannon these days. Brody, what do you think about Kyle Klein?
I mean, I think this is the issue with this is just our sport is so small, right? The media, the coverage, everything is so tiny. And what that basically means is like, if you don't win an event, you're not talked about. And if you're not one of the top guys that have won in the past, you're not talked about. So he's kind of in the shadow or has been in the shadow of Eagle and Simon over at Discmania. And then as far as like winning, he won one time at Idlewild. But let me just go, because last year he kind of all of a sudden flipped a switch towards the middle of the season. Third at Preserve, third at Idlewild, sixth at D-Glow, fifth at Mid-America Silver Series, Hunter doesn't care. Seventh at Ledgestone, seventh at Des Moines. Sixth at MVP, ninth at Disc Golf USDGC, fifth at the Tour Championship, fourth at Vegas this year, and then he just won. I mean, like, when you're looking at someone like that, like, he is consistently finishing in the top 10 these last several tournaments. And if it was anyone else with the Eagle, Paul, Calvin, Chris Dickerson, he would be talked about a whole lot. But because he hasn't won as much as those guys, we just don't talk about him.
Yeah.
He's like the Matty O. He's like the Matty O kind of in that same category, just really, really freaking good and consistent, but no one ever really talks about him that much.
It's true. I mean, and there's something to be said for those wins, you know, creating something there.
Also six in the world. Sorry.
Yeah.
Six in the world.
High ranked. Hunter, what do you think?
Yeah.
I don't know what circles all of y'all are running in. Kyle Klein is talked about all the time to me. I hear him talked about nonstop. I think that he's very properly rated. I mean, the list y'all just gave me of the Gannon stat doesn't surprise me a single bit. People said that they think he should be in the talks of like being a top player in the world. He is regularly. Like if you go in week in and week out, I constantly put him around like seventh to fifth best in the world. Like I think that he was pretty properly rated his entire career. He came in very hyped up off of, I believe it was a US AM win, Next Gen AM Tour win as well. Came in, had a lot of hype around him his rookie year. You know, Trevor and I were just talking, his Mid-America win back like 2 years ago. I vividly remember hyping him up on Gridblock, talking it over. There was a little bit of like, it's a silver series, so how much do I really care? But I vividly remember talking about him, hyping him up. Then when he comes down the stretch at USDGC, takes Paul to the playoff, we all talked about how this is the future. Like, we're looking at the future of the sport. He's a young gun. He's a killer. Sure, Gannon was a bigger story last year. I'm not changing that narrative. Gannon was a bigger story last year, period. But the ceiling is as high as Kyle Klein wants it to be. He's got all the arm talent in the world. It's just work ethic and his mental game is, as far as I can take him, is where he'll go.
Yeah, I think what I'll say, I think, you know, there's points on both sides. I think he does fall very close to the line of underrated, overrated. It's very close. I think, Hunter, you are right in a sense, and I think everybody else also has a point in where if you go a whole season and you don't win for a whole season, which is what he did last year, it is tough to stay relevant just because you need that one splash sometimes to get to stir your name back up. Because his season last year was remarkable. It was very, very good. And he was talked about, but maybe not as much as he would have been just as you have just that one win. So I think there's points both sides. But, I was kind of, you know, even myself, you know, I wasn't giving him enough credit. Brody?
I just want to know from everyone, Eagle or Kyle Klein, better season this year?
Kyle,
who are you taking?
100%.
Kyle Klein.
No doubt.
Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle.
Everyone's saying Kyle. All
Eagle
right.
needs his yeah. forehand back.
We might all regret that, but
I won't. I'd put money on it.
I hope once Eagle starts throwing his forehand, he does that video like, I think I got my swagger back, but edits it to I think I got my forehand back. He's like, whoa, whoa.
The opportunity is there.
It's right there.
All right, we're all tied up at 9 points right now. Everybody's brought their A game today. Going into the last topic, I think this is an interesting one. I'll be curious to see. I feel like I feel a certain way about this, so we'll see how everybody thinks. Kristen, in her interview, and I watched the interview back yesterday to make sure that I was understanding this completely as she said it. These are what she said. She claimed to not know she had a chance of winning until after throwing her upshot on 18. She is quoted in saying she did not know until after throwing that shot that she even had a chance of winning. We've seen this a lot in disc golf. We saw it with Eagle McMahon a few times. Like, there are players where this has happened. And you know what's funny, though, is it does happen to happen when players are winning these events. And then they say in the post round interview, you know, we don't really know. I think it happened with Alden Harris, too, I believe, at his win last year. And we wouldn't know if the loser, the guy on the losing end, knew.
Thank you.
You know, just to kind of calm me down.
Thank you. I was going to be like,
It's been a proven strategy. So my question is it wise for players to stay away from the live score and stick to their game plan? Or is it just a necessity to be attached to that live score? Let's see what everybody thinks about that. Taylor, lead off for us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine if the player themselves wants to stay away from the live scores through most of the round. I'm the same way. I play way better if I have no idea what my score is. But in these situations, you have to at least have someone caddying for you that you trust to come in and tell you, like, hey, we got to play this differently coming down the stretch. And I mean, with Kristen, we're not talking about someone that's like a flash in the pan winner, like, oh, randomly won Waco, randomly won here. She's in position to win all the time. So she is going to run into a situation that if this is how she wants to play it, she's going to make a mental mistake down the road where she needed to either attack a stroke or defend a stroke. She's going to be in that situation at some point with how often she wins. She needs to have somebody she trusts on the bag. I also think you're lucky if you don't get interviewed, because like if we found out later down the road that Ella just didn't know that she could have laid that up and won the tournament, that would be way worse.
Yeah, very, very valid point. Brody, I know you feel a certain way about this.
Well, I mean, it's weird because I think you can get away with it a lot more in disc golf because these courses aren't set up in a way that the majority of holes you have options to play differently or play safer. We have seen the last few tournaments, though, the last few holes have been good to where you actually could have a little bit of strategy. 18, there is actually strategy coming in on how to play that hole differently. But in most cases, people are just going to play the same way. I want to say the one thing that I thought was interesting, though, she went on further in that interview to say that she thought she was out of it. Like before, holes and holes before, she was like, she literally said, like, yeah, I'm just not playing one. I don't have a chance to win. So I'm just like going to be cruising, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting because she missed a very important putt on, I believe it was 14 for birdie. And then she missed another putt later on or earlier. Or yeah. 15, maybe she missed like two putts to where you wonder if she was in that mentality of like, I have a chance of winning this. Does she make those putts? I think you got to know the score coming at the end. You got to know when it like matters on holes where you actually can play differently. You got to know where you stand.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Hunter, what do you think?
Yeah. So early in the tournament, absolutely stick to your game plan. Don't worry about where you're falling on the scorecard. Just play your game, see where it shakes up. Late game, absolutely not. You got to know where you're at. You know, I'll even give you, if you want the front nine of the final round to play your game and see how it shakes up, sure. But the back nine, you got to know coming down the stretch. You got to be aware. A great example of this was Adam Hammes on 18 at Waco. He threw his shot. He had great situational awareness to understand, I can't win right now, so I'm going to lay this putt up and take solo second. Because even that is important to know your score, because that's the difference between a three-way tie for second or solo second was him laying that putt up. So that was great situational awareness. To be fair, Kristen's not this player, typically. Like, we've seen her multiple times change up her decision, change up her strategy, knowing where she's at. I think it goes to Brody's point, where she, coming down the stretch, gave up thinking, I'm out of this thing. Ella handed it back to her, and she probably just didn't realize what was going on and was just like, cruising, you know, whatever, I'm a finish in second. It could have cost her the win, but kind of to what Taylor was saying, that's on the caddy. She had a caddy the final round. A lot of times she doesn't. That's on the caddy to be coming in on hole 17 and be like, oh my gosh, you're in this thing. Let's do this on 18. So let's not put it all on Kristen because she's normally not that player.
Yeah, okay. I mean, as far as we know, she's normally not that player.
That's
true.
That's true. Yeah. It could be some impressive, just like spidey senses kick in if she's not checking the live score.
Yeah, Tyler, I know you're pretty passionate about this. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think the biggest issue with disc golfers is they don't have a caddy where they can trust to help them visualize shots. I have a competitive golf background, and the best things you can utilize is your caddy to help you visualize what you need to do. And what you do is you have a plan A and plan B. You have a plan for when you're winning and a plan for when you're losing. And you can switch back and forth between this plan. The biggest issue between Kevin and Ella is that they didn't execute and they chose two different plans. So that's what it comes down to. So when Kristen, you have to have situational awareness about where you are. That way you can switch up your plan to either plan A or plan B. The greatest thing about Kristen Zitar out of all of her game is her course management. She maximizes her abilities to birdie a hole And that's what led her to that position. So the fact that she didn't know where she was, it didn't matter because she has a game plan that maximizes her birdie potential, which in the end, she stayed around. She hung in there. She gave herself best chance of birdie on all those holes coming down the stretch. Ella screwed up. That's why Kristen Tatar is going to win. So I think you have to know where you are for situational awareness for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, anybody that comes from a competitive golfer understands how that all goes down. You know the importance of those caddies. There's a reason that some of the very popular caddies have floated around amongst really good players. And it's just a completely different setup, you know. And I think for Kristen, you know, she has to understand the environment of the FPO division. And a lot of times that there are just going to be swings like you won't believe out there. So it's crazy to think that, you know, she's been around that division and to think that she was just kind of cruise control. Yeah.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
So Tiger Woods says the difference between the goods and the greats and the greats and the elites is course management. And that's why Kristen is always right there.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. Completely agree. I think that you said it when you said that she, you know, she maximizes her potential for birdie. That is exactly how she plays her game. And there are a lot of players that could learn from that. And I think, like you mentioned, Brody, what do you have to say?
I was just going to say, I think this is also this can be highly debated. And I think some people are going to disagree with me here, but I think this is a money thing. If these purses were 10X or 15X or whatever, because you got to think, Kristen literally in this situation, as soon as she realizes on hole 12 or 13 or whatever it was that she's like, I'm playing bad, I'm not going to win this thing, she doesn't care if she gets second or third. She, like, the money does not matter there. But yeah, if it was a difference between $150,000 between second and third, now it's still something where it's like, I got to still be in this. Right. The difference between $3,000 and $2,000 or whatever it was for Kristen means nothing. I don't think you would hear that in other sports of where if someone started playing bad and didn't have a chance to win, that they would mentally just go, yeah, I was just cruising, I didn't really care. That's not a competitor spirit. That's like, what? That makes no sense to me.
If you 10X the money, you're going to have somebody you trust on the bag instead of somebody that sent you a message on Facebook the day before, too. You know, like, it goes both ways.
I got some on my bag today. He named his kid Brody after me, spelled with a Y. I trust the crap out of that guy.
You're right, though, Taylor. When the money goes up, everything gets a lot more serious.
Yes.
So, you know, that's something we're just going to have to wait on.
Things change quick.
Yeah, we'll find out what people are made of, because right now you're seeing some people fold playing for titles, you know, more than anything.
Exactly.
But you add a lot of money.
$100,000 putt.
Yeah.
I mean, I just was watching that Full Swing documentary and the Tour Championship. Rory's playing for $18 million, and you got Scottie Scheffler playing for $6 million in second. Rory wins. Yeah. I literally told Liz, my wife, I was like, his caddy just made like $1.8 million.
Yeah.
You know, like, that caddy is like freaking like, hey, let's go. Let's go.
That caddy knows exactly where he's at, and he's getting him to that championship, because that's $1.8 mil versus $600,000.
It'll definitely speed things up. All right. Everybody had a great show today, but we got to cut some people. We're on to the rapid fire round here. Hunter and Taylor with 13 points are going to advance over Brody and Tyler with 12. Really good show from everybody there. I think I was very tempted to just put four people in the finals, but, you know, I got to stick to my format.
Come on, let's do it.
I got to stick to my format. But great show from Brody and Tyler. They will be back, but we're going to move on here to our rapid fire round. All right. You know the rules. We got three topics here. 30 seconds for each person. We have a tie ball game, so I'm going to have to once again pick a number between 1 and 10. Taylor, what do you think it is?
I'm going to go 7.
6.
It is 6 again.
It's always 6, baby. It's always 6.
Hunter, would you like to go first or second?
Let me look at these questions again.
Oh, that's a great sign.
Give me first. Well, I wanted to know, like, I'm going to switch my order back and forth. I wanted to know which one wanted to go second on.
All right,
Hunter's, give me first.
Hunter's going to lead off here. First question. So we've seen advertising walls used as OB markers, and we've also seen them sit behind OB, like on hole 17 at Waco, sometimes creating confusion for the viewers. This happened when Ella threw her shot. You know, she was not on the other side of the wall, but the OB was coming off the wall. How should the walls be used, if even used at all, Hunter?
So personally, I think the walls should always define the OB line if they're being used how they were being used on hole one, mainly because hole 17, it's pretty obvious that you're trying to have that wooded section be the OB. You put the walls up against it, but by pulling the OB line like a meter off, you now have an arbitrary OB line that defines nothing. And the whole logic behind this was, you know, discs rolling OB are going to be stopped by the wall and drop in bounds. They sometimes don't want that. My counterpoint to that is discs that are OB trying to roll back in bounds might get stopped by the wall. So you got to pick the lesser of two evils, and I think it's more obvious to have them define the OB line.
That's a fair point. Taylor?
Yeah, I like using the walls. I don't want to get rid of them, but they should always be the OB line. And I think the worst part is that we don't even have consistency within the same events. Like sometimes there is a string, sometimes it's the wall, sometimes you have the string and the wall and it's not consistent. I think we run into some more confusing situations where there's the string and the wall. Like we had the Simon OB where he's leaning up against the wall but under the string, and it just looks visually weird. It makes the viewer experience worse. So I think that we should keep the walls in, that they should always be the OB line, and they should always be out there early enough that the players can practice on it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's such a weird scenario to like in golf, you've got the stakes, right? We know the color of the stakes, we know what they represent. In disc golf, with all the different ways they can define OB, and like, oh, there's walls, but I got to remember on this hole if this is the one where the wall is the OB or there comes off of it, like that's a nightmare right there. All right, question number two: should we be concerned about Paige Pierce, or is this just a typical Waco result for her after a not so great finish? Taylor, lead off for us.
Yeah, I mean, Paige typically doesn't do great at Waco, but not doing great for Paige is typically like still top five or top 10. I mean, she finished 15th in average 951, so it's not a great look. I'm less concerned because it's her first tournament of the year, but I was definitely on the Paige Pierce revenge tour after Kristen dominated last year, and that this is the motivation she needs to like light the tour on fire this year, and that tour is not off to a great start. We got a flat tire coming out of the driveway, so I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, I would agree. Hunter, what do you think?
I'm not concerned. This is typical Waco for her, in my opinion. I don't think that the course designs well for her game. She's a very all-gas, no-breaks player. I think where she struggles is where Kristen shines in the course management side, and I think Waco asks you for a lot of course management. So I didn't pick her in my top three. I advise people not to pick her in my top three because I knew exactly what was about to happen, and no surprise here, it happened. So I don't think this is a sign of anything. Paige Pierce is still going to probably have a few Elite Series wins. She might even pop off a major win. She's going to have a great season overall. No one needs to freak out. Take the Waco results across the board with a grain of salt.
What I would ask you, though, Hunter, is because she's won this event in years past, is Paige's game regressing? And even though she is able to win certain events, is that something that is a concern to you?
No. So, I mean, if we look back at 2018, the last time she won Waco, she won it with a 7-under, and the course par was a lot softer. You put her with a 7-under, we'll just give her the same amount of strokes. In this field, she came in like 8th place. So the field has gotten better. So Paige can't just dominate everything. So now it's going to be a little bit more course dependent for her. She's got to learn the course management if she wants to win out there.
Fair enough. All right. Last question. This is a tough one. A mystery, I'll say. Matty O is one of the most consistent players on tour. Just finish after finish, staying in the top 10 on the UDisc World Rankings, like insanely good. But he just can't seem to win on the highest level, even with so many top 10 finishes. What is keeping him out of the winner's circle, Hunter?
Brody's going to love this. His play style isn't aggressive enough. He's the modern day Nate Sexton. I think he's always going to end up in the top 10. He's Mr. Consistent. There's going to be a few weekends in his future at some point where that consistent play is going to get him a win. But he's consistently good, and I think that consistency is what's keeping him from being great, because the players that we see consistently win, they're taking risks. Those risks might not pay off. You might end up way down the leaderboard, but when they do pay off, that's what leads you to the win. So that causes a lot of variety, whereas Mr. Straight Line, Matty O, he's not taking enough risks to get the wins, which is leading to him just being consistently good across the board.
Okay. Brody, you're shaking your head big time there. I mean, I think he's muted at the moment.
All right. I wish I was in here, man. What the heck? Look at the stats!
What does that mean?
He was 13.9.
I thought I was going against Taylor
13.
Here.
I'll say at the end.
All right, Taylor, go ahead. You jump in.
I'll try to do you justice, Brody. I mean, this one it's hard to pinpoint. Let's talk about Matty O's first MPO win was in 2003. I was 10 years old. He's had a long time to win a big one, but I don't think there's any part of his game that holds him back. I mean, look, this is historically a regional guy. when he's talked about before not getting the full sponsorship support that some other guys get, and he's talked about playing for money before and just trying to, you know, place as high as he can and stay out there on tour. I think he's getting more support now. It's obviously not a game issue. I mean, you can see across the board, like Brody said, he's got, you know, four career finishes over 1060, and that's the number we typically look at to win a big major Elite Series event. He definitely has the game for it. I think as he gets more support and more experience on the full tour, we'll see him take one down eventually.
I don't know about that. Brody, you bring in your counterpoint, and then we're going to go again.
Okay, first off, Taylor, don't say you're going to back me up and then throw out a rating stat. I don't freaking care about ratings. Are you kidding me? Maddie, first off, it's hard to win on tour. Secondly, 13.91 strokes gained tee to green. That's number one in the field. How do you play conservative and get number one in the field tee to green?
Is that
he
from
lost
Waco?
Because – yes. He lost because he lost almost a full stroke putting. He lost almost a full stroke putting. He missed 9 putts inside of circle one. He was 1 for 5 from circle two. He didn't putt well.
Nice. One event.
Is that, yeah, I say, is that historically the issue though? Like,
no, you asked why he didn't win in Waco. Was that not the question?
No,
why
that wasn't
the question. I'm saying why he hasn't won in general. Like, he has not won an Elite Series or major.
It's his putting. It's his putting. When it comes down to it, he didn't putt well. That's what it comes down to.
He's never putted well. Matty Wells never putted well. You heard it here first.
No. If you look at his stats, his throwing is not what's causing him not to finish high. His throwing is always towards the top.
It's just 87% circle one last year.
What was it?
Pretty freaking good.
87% putting from circle one last year. His problem is killer instinct, and his throw is flawed, I think, even though he plays well. He can't perform well because something happens down the end.
Tyler's spot on.
I just feel like
Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler. His swing is flawed, so that's why he doesn't win enough.
I'm gonna see if he'll come on tour life this week. I'm gonna see if he'll come on tour life this week.
Tell him he's a bad putter.
I love Maddie, but
I don't think he's a bad putter. I just don't think he putted that well.
All I've learned
87%. You just look at the stats. You just told me to look at the stats.
All I've learned from this segment.
I'm looking at the stats at this tournament.
Well, that wasn't the question.
Well, the question was about the tournament.
It's historically.
Historically. Like, why is he not won?
I'm looking at his career.
I mean, it's tough scenes. But here's the thing. All I've learned from what we just did, that little runaround we just did, is that it's still a mystery. Because, it's the most confusing. I think what Tyler said is as true as it can be, which is, like, the killer instinct question. Because, like, that's the – at this point, once you go through all the stats and it's like – well, there's nothing left to pick apart. It just comes down to some guys know how to win and some guys don't. So I'm going to, you know, right now, Hunter and Taylor are tied at 17. I wasn't quite willing to give it to either of you there. So I'm going to have to come up with a tiebreaker here. And I think we're going to do our tiebreaker question.
Wait, whoa.
Yeah? What?
What?
Hold on. Maybe, hold on. Wait one second. Okay, I got a deep dive into these stats.
Yeah, you have fun.
You do that while we try to win the show.
Yeah.
I got a deep dive into these stats.
Okay.
I'll pull it up right now, too.
You try and solve the mystery. We'll finish up the show. So we're gonna do a tiebreaker question here for the last one. And I'm gonna kind of bring it back to one of our other topics and just kind of have you guys improvise here. So we're talking about consolidation, and everybody mentioned, you know, because, you know, it's obviously topical. We were kind of talking about the manufacturers consolidating, but I want to bring that question outwards to media conglomerates or other factions of disc golf that could also experience consolidation. What part of the sport do you think is the most important to start consolidating? Or do you think, as Hunter, to Hunter's point, should there continue to be diversity, and should that not be something that's really emphasized going forward? I'll let Taylor start here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that my mind goes to is basically how we cover events, live coverage versus post-produced, and how the Pro Tour is functioning currently. I think that one thing we'll start to see in the future, like Jomez has their contract coming up that they signed with the Disc Golf Pro Tour, being able to push the tournaments post-produced to YouTube. I think that will be coming under the Disc Golf Pro Tour's umbrella very quickly and be something where you're not getting post-produced the next day. You're going to get the full tournament maybe a week later, and they're really going to try to push everything into the DGN subscription just because that's where they can generate their capital, and that's how they can support themselves going forward.
Okay. I'm going to hand out my points after both of your points to make it suspenseful. Hunter, go ahead.
I think media in general. So Taylor covered the coverage side, but I think even when it comes to the shows and building out the Disc Golf Network as a whole, I think that that's in their best interest. Because I think that right now you have a lot of shows and a lot of media outlets that are, to be fair, just doing it better than what the Disc Golf Network's putting out. I mean, Tournament Central is a dumpster fire, if we're just going to be honest. So I think it's in the Pro Tour and the Disc Golf Network's best interest to try to consolidate the things that are working into the paid umbrella of the Disc Golf Network. And obviously, with that comes subscriptions, and with subscriptions comes funding for the tour. I think that's the most logical next step, the coverage and the actual media side.
I think you hit the key word there was the things that are working, consolidate them in. And you know what? This is a very even show, but I think, you know, as much as it breaks my heart for the sake of the Tournament Central slander, I'm going to have to give Hunter the win here. Just because somebody had, I don't think we could
make
it.
Someone had to say it.
Somebody had to say it. Somebody had to say it. That show is ridiculous and it needs to stop. And they need, honestly, they need guys like Taylor and Tyler to be on Tournament Central.
Yeah.
If you're watching this, anybody from the DGN, I got two guys here that would do a really good job.
My previous loss to Hunter was basically came down to, I said Evelina was going to putt better this year. I'm holding that L. I'm holding this L.
I don't think, I honestly, Taylor, now that you reminded me of that, you might not win the rest of the year. And I'm with you. I'm with you. I did the same thing in the preview show. I did the same thing. Bro, did you find any answers out there?
It's a mystery. I got to ask the man himself.
Okay.
I can't figure it out. These stats make no sense.
Between his ears, man. It's between his ears.
He putted better than Ricky last year.
I mean, it's mind-boggling.
His circle two putting was 33% last year. Six on.
But check his scrambling percentage, though. That might be it.
Oh,
fifth. It was fifth.
He's so good.
What I would love to see, though, is if there was a stat of what his putting was when he was in contention late. That would be interesting.
I mean, like a clutch too.
Maybe his putt lights out the first three rounds, and then like final round.
Yeah, UDisc just needs the killer instinct percentage. They need that.
Yeah,
let's get on that. All right. Well,
I went through. Yeah.
Go ahead and comment down below. What do you think is the solution to the mystery of Matty O? Because I think it's legitimately
so good.
The more I get into this, the more I do not understand how this guy is not winning all the time, realistically. But that's been another episode. Hunter got the W today. Anything to say, Hunter?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised I ended up here. I stopped looking at the scores halfway through. I kind of gave up and cruised my way here through it. No, I think the real winners, let's be honest here, the real winners of this episode were the listeners, man. I felt this was
a
very
good
lineup. This is a great lineup, and I'm honored to be here with the win, but you know, everyone performed great out there.
That was a really solid show. If you're listening and you think, "Hey, I could make the show even better," make sure to message us, get an audition, and we'd love to bring you on. Yeah, that's it for another episode of Debate Night. We'll be back next week with another one.